are most welcome.
Wonderful. Welcome back to Perter, She Wrote.
I am Sunshine Lamontree.
And I'm Dana Lococo.
And we are your co-hosts of Perter, She Wrote, the podcast where we talk about cats,
cozy
murder,
mysteries,
books.
Yep. This is a special mini episode we decided to record because I will be out of the country for 2 weeks.
She gone.
I'm gone. And you guys are in for a treat because we found something relevant to your interests.
Yeah, super relevant. You're going to love it. Before you do that,
yes,
if you would take a moment, maybe after this episode.
Yep. Hop on the interwebs and give us a rating, a review, or go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, just a little clickety tap and
yeah,
you will make our day.
Seriously.
We do have one fun point.
Yes. And I was going to say eagle-eyed, but then I'm like, wait, this is a podcast, so
eagle-eared.
Eagle-eared listener.
What hears really well? Elephants? Is that just because they have big ears?
I don't know.
What about those, bat squirrels? You know what I'm talking about?
Don't bats have to hear really well? Because aren't they, like, mostly blind? Is
yeah,
that location just hearing really well?
I think so. It's like radar hearing. You can hear shapes.
Let's go with bat-eared.
A bat-eared listener,
yes,
who was tuning in to episode 2 noticed that our perception of what outhouses are was incorrect.
Yes, and just a brief refresher, episode 2 we read Perfect Murder. The murder victim in that book, his body was found in, I guess, the sewage part of an outhouse.
Yeah, the cesspit located below this outhouse.
And we were kind of like, is that really how these work? Is it just really like a
giant
hole over, you know, a gaping pit in which, like, people, you know, die? And I don't know. Like, could you really throw a body down there? And now we know. Yes, that is exactly how an outhouse works.
To quote this listener, you could put 12 bodies down there. And I said, well, that's a really good place to hide a body then.
Yeah. We should mention, although the outhouse probably could have accommodated 12 bodies, the computer that was the critical piece of evidence in that mystery would have undoubtedly been destroyed,
yeah,
after rotting in
a pile of sludge
for a year.
Undoubtedly.
Just, yeah, it would have never...
Even though it was, as the book mentioned, a Korean-made electronic.
And was, like, washed off and maybe, like, stuck in a bag of rice for a while.
That does not work.
Not at all. So, thank you, good listener, for keeping us honest about how outhouses work.
Yes, they are not just permanent porta-potties.
Nope.
Placed outside.
The more you know.
Hey.
Which, actually, we've got a pretty educational episode today. We discovered, through the magic of the internet, a link to a document published in 1895 that is a Victorian cat dictionary.
I mean, it's so much more than that, though.
Yes. This 150-page pamphlet contains multitudes. It's really an early, kind of like an early document standing for cats, especially in an age where dogs were really more revered as man's best friend.
Cats were not well-liked in Victorian England and America.
I think people still thought that they were the familiars of witches and would steal your baby's breath as they slept. And being the Victorian era, people just had tons of babies.
Yeah.
And we should mention the title of this book, which, holy smokes, doesn't translate so great in today's modern age.
That's true. It's not particularly kosher
nowadays. What did we read, Sunshine?
We read a riveting analysis of cat language and culture called Pussy and Her Language.
Pussy and Her Language.
I mean, God bless Marvin R. Clarke.
Yes.
Do you want to hear about him?
I do.
Okay.
I want to know what would possess someone in 1895 to sit down and catalog not only cat language, but all of the reasons why cats are better than dogs.
And he has so many reasons why they are better. So Marvin R. Clarke was a Victorian gent, and there's not a lot of information on him, but I did find some really interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he self-published these theories.
Why am I not surprised?
as a tradition of this podcast,
yep.
This is a Victorian self-published cat book. And let's see, approximately 2/3 of the book are this essay from this French professor slash naturalist. Mm-hmm. His name was Alphonse Grimaldi. And he claimed to have analyzed cat sounds, and he wrote the dictionary on their meanings. So Marvin R. Clarke also wrote one other book,
mm-hmm.
The Skater's Companion, a comprehensive instruction book full of useful hints on roller skating.
Wow. So I didn't even think that roller skates were invented in 1895.
Apparently.
I feel like this guy was ahead of his time.
He considered roller skates one of the polite arts. Yeah.
Okay.
So he esteemed both cats and roller skating as the cream of high society.
Well, I like the way he thinks.
I mean, I'm into it.
I'm into
dig it. I found one mention of Pussy and Her Language in the Annual American Catalog of Publications spanning 1886 to 1900. It says that the writer of this little book is a thorough lover of the cat and has made a very interesting study of her, and seeks to prove that the cat has a language of her own, which is easy of acquirement by us. It gives many cat words with their meanings, and shows how the language was constructed, and further gives the best of the many wonderful cat stories narrated by foreign as well as American authors.
There are some stories in this book. Lest you think that it is a dry sort of academic text all about cat language.
He uses anecdote after anecdote to colorfully illustrate his theories.
This is basically like the Victorian equivalent of BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
With all of the cat stories in it.
He's like, you'll never believe what this cat did.
Right, yeah. Turn the page and read more. Because computers are decades in the future. We don't even know what they are yet.
Okay, so this French professor, this mm-hmm. naturalist, Alphonse Léon Grimaldi, he had a load of titles after his name. He was FRS, FGS, MOS, DH, DUC,
ooh,
MFAS, MFA, et al. I guess he was super well educated.
He sounds very, very accomplished.
He studied the animal kingdom in general, but focused much of his research on cats. And his work was never published because he was too afraid of being made fun of by other scientists.
Poor Alphonse.
So instead, he gave this essay, like all of his life's research on cats,
mm-hmm.
to Marvin R. Clarke, and he was like, you deal with it.
Do you think that they were both roller skating enthusiasts?
Oh my god, like, I can that's only how they met. Hope.
Ugh.
The plot thickens, though.
What?
Because the theory goes that Clarke invented several scientists whom he both quoted and impersonated.
Oh,
and
no.
One of them was the great French naturalist, Alphonse.
Ugh.
So it's possible that Alphonse doesn't even exist.
Oh my god.
And that Marvin R. Clarke was off his rocker and just
fake
made
news.
This guy up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Which just further cements the idea that this Marvin R. Clarke guy was way ahead of his time.
True.
Okay.
Very true.
But then, about five pages deep into a Google search, I came across a comment.
Also, good for you for going five pages deep into a Google search.
I mean, you think there's nothing there, but to be fair, there were only six pages total.
This is like
of results.
This is like CSI right there.
So this person asserted that Marvin R. Clarke was a New York newspaper editor mm-hmm. and a member of the 13 Club.
What is that?
The 13 Club was a men's club that met annually, ostensibly to flaunt superstitions, though mostly just to throw big, like, superstition-themed parties.
I hope they roller skated.
Oh my god.
I hope
can
they
you imagine
wore, like, cult robes and roller skated.
A group of Victorian men in cult robes roller skating through the streets.
The Victorian era was so crazy.
Oh my god.
And also, if I understand correctly, so stinky. Like,
smelled like outhouse everywhere.
Yes! Terrible time.
But so this person posits a theory that he was probably joking when he wrote this book on cat language.
Mm.
But we just don't know. He could have been very honest about it.
It is an elaborate joke, if it truly is one.
Yeah.
He committed.
As a side note, while I was doing my research, mm-hmm. I found a mention of this book in Good Housekeeping, in an issue from 1895.
Oh, wow.
In a section called Library Leaflets. Mm-hmm. But also listed in that section was a book called How to Make Money, Although a Woman.
Oh, my God.
Written by Irene W. Hart, author of How to Get Married, Although a Woman.
What?
I don't know. You would think the easiest thing to do as a woman in the Victorian era was to get married.
I mean, that was, like, basically, if I understand correctly,
your sole purpose,
and
right?
And, like, all your parents and family were doing was, like, 14, you're getting old. Like, we gotta marry you off.
Let's find a nice duke.
Yeah.
A nice merchant will do.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, so I thought that was worthy of a tangent.
Unless maybe it was, like, how to propose marriage if you're a woman.
Oh.
As opposed to, like,
maybe
pick me, I'm fruitful and plump.
Look at these childbearing hips.
Yes. We'll have at least six.
Maybe Irene W. Hart was a feminist and she was like, take the agency into your own hands.
Yeah.
And ask for marriage.
Make your own money. Man.
Get your own husband on your terms.
Way to go, Irene.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So that's all the information I have about Marvin Clark. Maybe he was totally insane. Maybe Alphonse Leon Grimaldi was real and maybe he wasn't. It was all a joke.
Ultimately, it sounds like Marvin R. Clark, like most forward-thinking pioneers, he might have just had ideas that were a little too scary for people to swallow.
Certainly. He had some larger-than-life ideas about cats.
Yes.
Should we talk about some of them?
Absolutely. One thing I greatly enjoyed while flipping through this pamphlet was that the word cat is always capitalized.
Well, yes, it's a proper noun.
It is a proper noun. So he's putting a lot of reverence on cats. And he has good reason to do that because in his mind, cats and humans are pretty much on the same level.
Yeah.
I mean, some people today say that, like, dolphins and humans are on the same level because they both have language and, you know, enjoy sex for pleasure and no other species does that. But Martin R. Clark was like, no way, man, it's cats. Cats and people, same brain.
In fact, he literally says that the brain of the cat so closely resembles that of a man as to force the unwilling admission from anatomists and physiologists that in form and substance, they bear so close and striking a similarity that it must be conceded that they are, to all intents and purposes, the same in substance and conformation, and only differ in weight and size. Which is Victorian speak for cats have the same exact brain as humans, just smaller and lighter.
And the only difference is that they have a cat body and we have a human body, but the brains are the same.
Yep.
And he describes a lot of cat behaviors that are pretty similar to human behaviors. In news that really surprises no one, Marvin R. Clark himself owned many cats over his lifespan. In particular, he described two of them, Nellie and Tom, as being married.
I love the originality of naming a tomcat Tom.
And from what I can tell, he had several tomcats named Tom.
that was like when I was five and I would name every pet rabbit I had, Thumper, just over and over again.
Yeah, Thumper 1, Thumper 2.
Yeah, my mom would be like, okay,
yeah,
sure, like, right. Why not?
I mean, you can pick a different name. Yeah.
No, this one's good.
Yeah.
It's Tom, forever.
Forever.
All the boy cats.
Yes, they're all Toms. But whenever he mentioned a male and female cat, they were always married. They were not living in sin. It was not an affront to Christendom itself that they would live under the same roof.
Well, it was the Victorian era.
That's
true. So, of course, his two cats were married.
Perhaps he did not read one of the other feminist pamphlets published that year about making your own money and finding your own husband if you are a lady cat.
He must have missed that.
He must have.
Poor Nellie.
Well, what other things did the cats do that essentially boiled down to them being tiny, furrier people?
They were diplomatic spies.
Yes.
right in the first chapter, I believe.
He just comes out of the gate with this theory.
He's like, they're in the factory, the workshop, the mill, the foundry. He lists all these places. They're in ships, political headquarters, even in the grand capitol buildings at Washington, and penetrating without hindrance into the very secret cabinet meetings at the White House. And he's like, they are spies.
Yep.
Upon whose ears fall the secrets of a nation, which, if breathed at some inopportune moment, might be its ruin. So basically, cats know all of our political secrets. Yeah. And if they ever decided to tell them to someone else, they could upend the world order.
Cat Illuminati. You heard it here first.
Illumicatty.
Illumicatty. I love it. So they are spies because they understand human language, but thankfully, Martin R. Clark has elaborated, he's elaborated in great detail how to understand cat language, which has many origins. First and foremost, cats got their language the same way that Victorian humans got their language, which is from God himself above.
That's right. It is divine origin.
Yep.
That cats can speak.
Yes.
He looked at Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at cats and he was like, you know what?
Yep.
You guys both deserve this.
Exactly. Like, here you go.
Have some language.
From my magic hands to your mouths. I guess. speak a language. But what does cat language sound like? Like, what's a good human equivalent?
Clark believes, quote, the Chinese language is more nearly like the cat language than any of the existing languages, and so closely resembles it in very many respects as to almost persuade me that the language of the cat was derived from it.
Despite being derived from Chinese, as Clark believes, all cats speak with a French accent.
So, purring?
French.
It's a French sound. The way that they escalate their vowels.
French.
So French. I think he, at one point, even suggests that the gestures they make with their tails.
Yes.
French.
Yeah, body language was very important.
Yeah.
Very French.
Yeah.
Shared love of baguettes.
Milk. Cheese. The dairy category in general.
French.
So French.
Yeah.
He also believes that cats have some special powers, like they can tell you the weather based on what direction they are licking their fur.
If you do not have a clock, you can tell the time by staring deeply into a cat's eyes, and depending on how their pupils dilate and contract, that will tell you the time.
He believed that in the Celestial Empire, i.e. China, they were too poor to have clocks, so they used cat's eyes to tell them the time of day.
Which is also kind of like the sun does that.
Yeah.
Which still exists in China.
Right. And is perhaps easier to use than getting a cat to stay still and look at you in the face.
That might be one hole in his theory.
Just a tiny question that we could put to one of his theories.
Although Martin R. Clark was a worldly man and elaborated in great detail about how cats are perceived around the world and throughout history. For example, he talked quite a bit about the Egyptians and their adoration of cats and how when a family cat passed away, it was also mummified. And in mourning, everyone would shave their eyebrows.
I miss and, that part.
Yes, shave your eyebrows off in grief. And mourn.
They'd be like, we're so sad, we cannot bear to look good.
No, take it
shave
right
it off.
Shave it off. Our cat's dead. We've mummified it. It's buried in a temple. Life is bleak. And also going back to cats being on the same level as humans, he posited that in the Roman Empire, killing a cat carried the same punishment as killing a human.
Right, he tells the story of a Roman soldier who accidentally killed a cat, and he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death.
Bad news, buddy.
I mean,
there has to be a happy medium between the Roman Empire and modern society, but we've yet to find it. Let's see. Oh, other historical figures. Napoleon apparently hated cats.
He hated cats as much as the Austrians and the Russians hated him.
Just a total salt fest. Nothing, no love lost there.
Shade for days.
Yes.
Speaking of shade, Marvin R. Clark had a bone to pick with Noah Webster of Webster's Dictionary.
The dictionary that some might say was a real dictionary because it was for human language versus pussy in her language for cats.
Which was debatably dictionary-esque.
Yeah, there's a lot more content going on.
He took issue with the fact that the dictionary labeled cats as deceitful. He also took issue, if you read throughout this 150-page pamphlet, he takes issue with the fact that Webster describes animals as behaving on instinct alone,
yes,
instead of calculated intelligence.
Because if there's anything that cats are up to, it's using their human-like brains to make grand plans about who they're going to marry.
How to insert themselves in modern-day politics.
They've got to keep all of those international secrets straight. So, no, they are not just acting on instinct, Webster.
There's also a great quote I have where he says, "A dog on velvet is evidently out of place. He would be as happy in clean straw. But a cat on velvet does not awaken any sense of the incongruous. If animals could speak, the dog would be a bluff, outspoken, honest fellow. But the cat would have the rare talent of never saying a word too much." So dogs are...
they're just kind of bumbling...
idiots.
Yeah. And Martin R. Clark is, like, not afraid to put them on blast.
Mm-hmm.
He does not look kindly on those who dislike cats. He shares an anecdote, one of his many anecdotes of unbelievable yet true cat antics, of a cat that learned how to ring a doorbell to gain entry into its master's house. And Martin R. Clark says, "This, I imagine, is an expression of more intelligence than is often evinced by many of the cat's traducers among the country bumpkins, who, with the bell handle under their noses, have frequently been known to knock upon the door."
Oh.
Yeah.
Country bumpkins.
Don't even know how to use a doorbell.
A relatively new invention. That's better
than you. Yes. He also laments that one of a million dogs gets a bad name, while not one of a million cats gets a good one.
Yeah.
So he is here for cats.
He's really offended by anyone who doesn't love cats.
Yeah.
I feel like he would love the internet today.
He would be so happy.
I feel like, finally.
He would be in seventh heaven.
My day of reckoning has come.
And actually, he would probably be well suited to be on the internet because a lot of the stories he shares are essentially Victorian clickbait. I mean, many of these cat anecdotes that he's compiled in the pamphlet are dubiously sourced, and they are frequently started with unbelievable true stories, kind of like, "You'll never believe what this cat did next." But there's parallels between the anecdotes he shares and modern-day clickbait that I have absolutely clicked on, namely unlikely animal friendships.
Yeah, the cat that adopted those chicken babies.
Yep, the cat that became friends with the dog, despite dogs, you know,
being terrible.
Yeah.
According to Clark, at least.
Yes. There's cats that traverse incredible distances to return to their families.
Ooh, like Homeward Bound.
Oh, he would have loved Homeward Bound.
Oh my gosh.
There is a story of a mother cat who is separated from her kittens, who managed to escape from the kitchen she was being held in and walked all around the city of New York, gathered each of her three kittens, and brought them back.
I couldn't figure out, was he like dumping her kittens in the busy city and being like, "I don't want these kittens in my house anymore"?
I think he was trying to like make them look cute and put them on in parks, and people would just, I guess, pick them up and be like, "Great, I have a cat now." I mean, again, like, spaying and neutering your pets was not a thing in the Victorian
That's
era.
Right.
So there were just kittens everywhere. There was also his unbelievable anecdote of Nellie and Tom, who we mentioned earlier, his married cats. But the original Tom was quite a philanderer, and he left Nellie with the kittens and kind of ran around on the streets one too many times. So Marvin R. Clark brought home another cat, also named Tom. And Nellie and Second Tom lived a happy life until Original Tom came back. And this is where the headline, let's see, cat claps back at philandering cat husband might be appropriate.
That sounds good. Like a Jezebel article.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because, quote, in both the new Tom and Nellie, who alone was a host in herself, the mangy Tom found more than his match, and he was beaten, torn, wounded at every point, and a total wreck when he scurried out of the house and took his sorrowful way down the street towards the dock at the foot of Hubert Street. Whether or not he did the best thing he could have done under the circumstances and went and drowned himself is more Original Tom.
Oh my god.
It's like cat reality TV.
Yeah. He comes home, finds that his cat wife has had enough of his shit.
Right. She's got a new Tom.
She's got a new Tom. He's taking care of her. They're happy. She's like, beat it.
Yeah, get out of here.
You missed your chance.
Go drown yourself.
Go drown yourself.
Yeah.
Is literally what the book says.
So these anecdotes are wild. Martin R. Clark is a crazy man.
Yeah. That story doesn't have a happy ending, though.
It does not have a happy ending. Sadly, Second Tom was shot by some cruel person, and then Nellie died of grief 2 weeks later.
Oh my god.
Really sad. It's kind of bleak.
Like a Lifetime original movie.
Yes.
But everyone dies in the end.
And everyone is a cat. I think we should cap this episode with a little pop quiz.
Ooh.
So Clark identified 17 fundamental words of the cat language.
Yeah. I'm covering the answers on my sheet.
Yes.
If you want to just pop your hand over so we can't cheat. Okay. Go ahead. Pick a word.
So, yes. Sunshine.
Yes.
Can you tell me what pleatable means?
Say it again.
Pleatable.
I've never heard a cat make that noise.
Nor have I.
Pleatable, huh?
It is, let's see, it's spelled P-T-L-E-E hyphen B-L.
Oh. Pleatable. Does it mean let's play pool?
It means mouse meat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, Dana, what does Alleloo mean?
Alleloo. I think that would mean good morning.
Water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. If your cat says alleloo to you, it means water.
Well, never heard Herschel say that, but I will listen next time.
Yeah.
He's at the water fountain.
It could be your ears and not his inability to adhere to this cat dictionary.
I mean, that's probably right.
Unless he speaks like a dialect.
Oh,
that
true.
Has evolved from this point.
It could have.
Yeah.
It very well could have.
He's regional cat language.
Ah, if only the ghost of Martin R. Clark could come and elaborate. Let's see. Oh, here's one. Meow.
Oh, does that one mean hello?
That one means beware.
Oh. Ooh, I have a fun one. Yow.
I'm going to say that one means ouch.
That one means extermination from the face of the earth.
What?
Yeah. The word yow means extermination from the face of the earth, and when the common word meow is used with strong emphasis on the first syllable, it means beware, for the fur is about to fly.
Wow. That's a lot to pack into a three-letter word.
Yow.
That one I can actually kind of see Herschel making, because if he gets pissed, I'm going to listen for it next time.
I feel like yow is the sound they make right before their tail explodes into that puff.
They have doubled in size. Watch out. Let's see. Mew.
Oh, mew.
Not to be confused with meow or yow. This is mew.
Mew.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean I love you?
Oh, that would be sweet.
But it doesn't, does it?
It means here.
We should finish off with, I think, my favorite, which is described in great detail.
Yes.
Because this is where they talk about the French accent.
Oh, yes.
Prrrr.
Ooh. I love that you can roll your R's. I can't do that, so I'm glad that you took that one. I think that is the cat equivalent of tipping your hat and saying, good day, sir.
Kind of.
Ooh.
It is, it's not a word per se, it's more of a feeling. It means like satisfaction or contentment.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So that is just a little nibble of the cat dictionary.
We will post a link to Pussy and Her Language on our blog. It's in the public domain, so you can read it yourself. Be advised, if you download it as a PDF onto your phone, the title Pussy and Her Language is at the top of every single page, and you might feel like a creep reading it on the train.
Let's finish off with this great quote about the future. Perhaps at no distant day, science, through the medium of electricity, may furnish a means of discovering not only the words of the singer, but also many words of the feline language, which, through ignorance, are now mouthed by the cat for lack of knowledge of the importance of emphasis and clearness of expression. I think that means that in the future, we will use electricity to translate cats.
And that day can't come soon enough.
Any moment now, I'm hoping.
Come on, future.
This has been a minisode of Purter, She Wrote.
Thanks for listening. We will be back in a couple of weeks with another full cozy cat mystery to dig into.
In the meantime, follow along with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Yep. And give us a follow on iTunes and a rating and a review if you are feeling so inclined.
We love you, kittens.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.